It's a value, super value,
It's
incredible
always
mega
value.
value. It is the, I don't know what the toilet paper math is. It is the 64 rolls when you only bought 15 roll efficiency.
Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
Me too.
Yeah, so this is October. Some other people are carrying the torch for the content out there. I watched a really cool tutorial today where this guy built an orc fort out of literal garbage.
True
it's
to
not
form.
Garbage. Random, like seemingly really random spare bits and cardboard. You know, like corrugated cardboard boxes.
More power
that sounds that already sounds amazing.
He did it really was a great job, and he said that the whole project took him about 4 hours, and it looked very the size was very similar to the Gorka Morka orc like town that came with that box, the cardboard thing that came with that. So I'll try to find the video again and post it in the show notes. But what the dude did was he made sure that there were no like 90 degree angles or real, everything was askew just a little bit, not enough to make models slide off. But everything was very orky and not uniform. And he even, you know, cut out pieces of cardboard to match some of the shapes that are on the vehicles, you know, like the nose that's on the truck, that front grill that slots in from the top. Made a couple of those to go about his stuff. And then, you know, the orc skull, like that's on the banner of the Stompa, made a couple of those out of cardboard.
This thing sounds amazing.
It really is. I mean, for what it was, yeah, absolutely amazing.
Do you guys ever remember, I don't know if you guys have them over there, but there was like fun houses where you'd walk into this room and it would be slanted, or it would seem big on one side and the same dimensions on the other, and you'd walk towards it and it would keep getting smaller. It seemed like really Wonka and stuff. I always think of like an orc room like that where the weird boy hangs out and no one can physically fit through the door, but they all manage to fit through the door because they believe they can or something. I don't know. This is how my imagination works.
I think that's very orky. Yeah.
It's a fun place. Yeah. Not fit for everybody.
So I was doing a little poking around, doing a little research for this segment, and found some really creative stuff out there from folks. Also, then like you go down the rabbit hole of videos, and I found a guy who made a completely magnetized Warcry board to where he could hang it on the wall and play Warcry on his wall if you wanted to.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, he did. He did. There's a lot of creative folks out there. It's a great time to be in the hobby, alive in the hobby.
One step closer to whatever chess game they were playing in A New Hope. One step, guys.
Yep. So let's talk about the Orc Wayback Machine. So I'm going to go all the way back to Here We Go. And if I remember correctly, I mean, again, I was super early days in the hobby when Here We Go came out. It was, I think, the first hardback book that was dedicated specifically to orcs. And I think it had collections of like White Dwarf articles or something that had been out previously at the time, and then they made it into a book. I don't know that that's true, but that was something they were doing with several of the books back in the day. They'd publish some one-off articles, finally get enough one-off articles, and then put them into a book. But the Here We Go was pretty much like your first Orc Codex.
Mm.
But it was one of those big hardbacks, like the Chaos Tomes.
Yeah. And was that how old was that? Was that back when Gaz was still on his own little battle wagon, and it was just the most awful looking but yet bad vehicle in the entire galaxy?
Yes. So this is
that old?
Yeah. This is that old. This is the, I don't know if this is the absolute first appearance of Gaz. This goes back in 1991 is when this was published.
Yeah, that thing was that battle wagon still, like, I remember looking at that as like a 8-year-old boy and just being like, that is so cool.
Yeah,
I think there was a Nazgrim. There was Gaz and Nazgrim. Was there a Nazgrim model back then as well? It was like the Bad Moons.
These guys, I don't think they had actual bespoke models, like character models at the time. Yeah. I think they were just, so I think that, look, some orc player, please correct me. This is not me telling you how it is or trying to rewrite history. I want to be corrected right now. Yeah. But I think that this came out and then Gaz got a model, like an actual official model, which looks, I mean, you know, he's on a 25 mil base. It looks like a, you know, a war, but not even, he's not even knob size now. He's like,
yeah,
you know, or whatever at this point. But this is before, this is when he was just a glimmer in Andy Chambers' eyes.
Yeah. I would love to see someone playing that old model on Gaz's new size base.
Just put it on the base.
I would high five you. I think you are a scholar, just an absolute stallion of a man.
Well, I want to talk about medical squigs for a second.
Okay.
Medicinal squigs. Yep. All right. Sure.
Yeah, all right. So many kinds of squigs have medicinal uses, and some varieties, such as syringe squigs, are used exclusively for this purpose. Medical squigs have natural properties, which the Pain Boys find useful in their craft of patching together battle-damaged orcs. Syringe squigs, for example, exude a sporific venom, which makes a fine anesthetic.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, same.
I won't read the whole passage or whatever here, but it goes on to talk about like swab squigs and hair squigs and that kind of stuff. It says other squigs.
You know what I'm picturing? I'm picturing, you know the doctors, that infomercial, whatever it is, the doctor's show where they sell you all sorts of whatever your opinion on that show may be. But I was just picturing like five or six pain boys just being selling it to the boys, the medicinal uses of squigs. That's just fantastic.
Other squigs are killed and preserved and used to make medicines. Pain boys sometimes rear squigs in cages or bottles, but more often they dig special latrines and cultivate the various strange creatures inside. These latrines have to be specially guarded by the pain boy orderlies, both to prevent the squigs being stolen by rivals and to prevent any innocent orcs accidentally using a latrine without realizing.
Awesome. Does that allude to the fact that these fungus boys defecate?
This may even be like pre-fungus. This would have been post-fungus. I think this is probably the orc history was still, in flux. Who knows? Correct. Again, you orc scholars, let me know what's up. So every pain boy raises his own strain of squigs and takes considerable pride in their potency. Pain boys are always trying to create new types of medicinal or medical squig or to adapt familiar squigs to medical uses. Attempts to use face eater squigs to amputate a patient's limb have not proven very successful, as they tend to bite off the orderly's arm and legs or even the pain boy's fingers. So just in case.
But so they're farmers. They cultivate, they farm the squigs.
Yep. They tend them. They raise their, it's a point of pride for pain boys. This is some missing lore. Some deep things that we need to know.
This is amazing. I've got like Beverly Hillbillies going on in my head now. Just striking gold, just a nice big patch of squigs and moving to whatever Beverly Hills in the 40K.
It's like, coming down here from the South, everybody's great grandmother has some kind of home remedy.
Yeah. Yep. Special toad spotted squig.
Are you calling squigs homeopathic?
They're raised, they're cultivated, they're, seem to be from the land.
Can't be as bad for you as bleach. Just going to put it out there.
So there's a ton in this. Here we go, and it does get into the origins of Gaz, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, I still think Gaz is the big polarizing element here. Is there like the one consistent there's not many fluff pieces written about orcs that don't in some way involve Gaz, right? What was the one that was contending with the Space Wolves? Gut Ripper.
Gut Ripper is Ogryn. Is that an Ogryn?
No. He got a.
Oh, I'm thinking of the Skaven thing.
He came out with a special box set with him and a new Wolf Lord, the one with the red hair and the power axe. But yeah, there's a Grok Face Ripper. Grok Face Ripper. That's right. His model is sick.
It is. I use that as a war boss figure.
Yeah. It's just like the updated extra chunky Black Reach war boss. It looks fantastic.
He's an easy build model, but it's really good.
Agreed. But yeah, there are a few other notable fluff pieces. Like I mentioned Nazgrim. So Nazgrim is like Gaz's 2IC, but he's really dropped off fluff wise. Like when I was growing up and first reading my orc stuff, it was Nazgrim, and it was like in every other story.
You want to guess? Well, no, we'll talk about Gaz a little bit later. But I was going to see if anybody would take a guess at what his original war gear was.
Oof. Well, that big old lobster claw.
He had the adamantium skull thing, right?
So we'll get there. We'll get there. Got to save some for the back half of the show.
All right.
Fine. Be like that.
Yeah, look, I gotta leave you wanting a little bit more. We'll talk about it in this episode though, I promise.
Good-o. How you guys doing with this all this new 9th edition stuff? Like, 9th edition is starting to roll out. We're getting our first couple of codexes have been out for, what, a week now?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hard in the paint with Necrons, man. I've got my... So the Silent King is an amazing model. I have him in 14 pieces right now. Because, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the pictures and everything. But, like, to get all the detail I want behind all the different parts of it, it's not like, you know, it's not like with Mortarion or something where like the shoulders go on, the cloak goes over and stuff like that. It's all these little, I mean, the Silent King and his two dudes are completely practically removable from the throne platform, and the throne platform itself I've got broken up into like 12 different pieces. But anyways, I'm super excited and I'm having a blast getting these Necrons together and some of the lists that are out there. I mean, I think it's a great time for Necrons. Again,
me too.
As I said last time.
Silent King is a big boy. I mean, he's, what is he, three times as tall as an Intercessor?
I mean, he's taller than that, I think, actually. Just like I'm talking about the whole base.
No, I mean, his actual model, like the model of the King himself.
I'm standing him up next to one right now. No. The King, it might look like that in a picture. He is about half as tall and again than a Primaris. So he's like 150% Primaris scale.
Still
150% better. Nah, probably many, many more times than that. But yeah,
it's. I mean, he looks good. And you know what? He's got an interesting body type. So like the two guys next to him are very much like Necron-y looking dudes. They don't actually even look. It's pretty cool. You read the lore. They're like two nondescript. One's a cryptek. One's an overlord that he pulled from these like no name dynasties essentially, and was like, you're going to be my two cronies riding on my throne with me. But he is body himself.
Were they cool with that?
I mean, apparently they were.
How would you say that?
Yeah, a lot of people feel like he's like the Silent King has a lot of fake news going on because he can just essentially rewrite codes and tell you whatever he wants, supposedly. At least that's what Imhotep says. But no, the Silent King's body himself, like I'm sitting here looking at it, he is, I mean, I'm putting him next to another Necron. His like leg is almost to where their head is. Like, he's tall. He's a tall, tall Necron.
That's pretty cool, though.
So, in the fluff, you probably know a bit more than I do, but wasn't one of his last acts after sealing the Catan away and putting his people to sleep before he jettisoned himself off into the ether for his little walkabout voyage? Well, didn't he revert their programming? So, he took away the programming from the Pharaons and kind of tried to give them free will again?
Yeah, so he released them. Supposedly, like Imhotep, like, and it's pretty cool. I mean, the Necron Codex does an amazing job of covering the Silent King, where a lot of times, so if you looked at the 8th edition Codex of Necrons, it absolutely says, like, I went back and because I admit I was very interested in seeing if anything had changed. And really, it's more that they just took the old stuff and added on, which is always appreciated to certain extents of consistency. But so he did. He proclaimed that's what he did, right? So he left and he cut the codes and he bounced. However, there's a lot of concern from those that, I mean, arguably, you'd think that their denial of the Silent King would kind of indicate that they had cut him off or that he had actually, in fact, cut them off. But in reality, like, Imhotep is like, well, we don't actually know that he did everything. He could have just cut it for the time as some kind of temporary deal, and he can just rewrite the codes whenever he wants or something like that. It's very cool, very kind of vague, almost like, you know, this far-reaching influence that he can just reach out and do that.
That's pretty neat. Cool. Like, he can write his own myths about himself, kind of thing.
Exactly.
But he is wearing, isn't his cloak like the skin of a god?
So the Satan that's trapped in his throne, that's called the Burning One. He's got a really long name that starts with an N. And his cloak is weaved out of, it's essentially weaved from necrodermis or something like that. But it's, so his whole throne is powered by a full-blown Satan. Yeah, I mean, just
skin
awesome
of a god.
Stuff.
That's big enough for me. He can write his own. I mean, I'd believe anything you said about him. Yeah, he can chop down 100 trees with one blow of his axe. Sure.
No. I got to tell you that I'm reading the new Indominus book, which is pretty cool because if people didn't realize 9th edition is time traveling backwards, Indominus is set. They haven't, at least in the book, like where they're at, they haven't even crossed over the Cicatrix Maledictum. They're still trying, like Gilliman's still trying to get across. So this is well before Dark Imperium.
Is that, that's the big, like, Barry that tore the Imperium in half, right? Or the...
Exactly. So the new, you know, the new scar, the new warp storm kind of deal that breaks the Imperium in half with Imperium Nihilus on one side and the Imperium Prime on the other. And so Gilliman, you know, from Earth, right? Because at the end of Gathering Storm, he went to Earth and saw the Emperor. He decides like, hey, we got to go reunite the Empire. I've got the new Primaris Marines, right? And so all the new Primaris Marines, it's pretty cool, like some of the turmoil and convolutedness of like inserting these all new Primaris Marines into the mix of it. And but anyways, the you also, it's very rare in a lot of cases, there isn't a lot of instances where the authors have actually written from the Necron side of it, and so it's pretty cool to see that. And how the, I mean, I'm still reading through it, but the from what I've seen so far, the main character is a overlord. The main character on the Necron side is an overlord who has claims to like the biological lineage of the Silent King, which I just thought was really cool. Like
that sounds,
you know,
good.
If you think about it, like all of the overlords that you're seeing right now, for the most part, were all, you know, alive. Obviously, like there's no new Necrons coming out of anywhere, right? Yeah, so they're all like these timeless beings that still have like these throwback, you know, relationships and memories of when they were all kings and queens or whatever. It's just really cool stuff that you just don't really think about, I guess, all the time.
I love that a lot. Everything you just said, fantastic.
Yeah, that was the best thing about the Necrons is giving that. That's what they missed. They were missing out on that personality. Like I think that them before they got this dynastic, you know, skin to them, to their lore and stuff, it didn't quite fit into 40K. Like it wasn't as, what is it, space gothic, space opera enough.
Sure.
And now it is.
Is well, it ever so, space opera enough? Like, not for me.
Oh, I'm not saying it can't be more. There's still plenty of room to make it more. I'm just saying that it got up to that threshold that everything else was on.
Well, and so with that, I tell you what, like the you know, so if you haven't got a chance to look at it, you know, you go into these new codexes and they have a Crusade section, right? And I've been really big on getting into this Crusade stuff. I really enjoy it. And so I've started my own. I mean, I've had my own dynasty for a while, right? And I've just kind of, just like, you know, you make your own Space Marine faction, and then you can use whatever kind of rules you want to play around with or whatever. I've done that with my, previously I was calling them the Redcrons, but so they made a cool new map in the Necron Codex that shows where all the Necrons are. And there was this one faction called Char Novoke. And so the Novoke is like an actual like faction in the rules. Char Novoke is, I'm assuming, a kind of breakoff. But those poor guys, they were like asleep and they woke up to being like essentially nibbled on by Tyranids. But anyways, so I took this Char deal. And which, I mean, if you go to Gundam, right? Like if you've looked at any classic Gundam, Char is the like an ace pilot who pilots the red Gundam or red mobile suit. And so I've kind of... So I've made my own Char Khan dynasty. That's these red painted Necrons that I'm a huge fan of right now. I'm going crazy. I know. I'm sorry. I'm
off. Also, it's also because your name's red. Yeah, right. Red. Because you. Yeah,
I think
red.
It's great.
Yeah.
On the Silent King model, you know that it pains me to like paint models on other models. You know, like if something comes out and there's like 17 models like riding on it or something like that, I just look at it and I just think I have to really mentally prepare myself to do a good job with that. Let's and
start mentally preparing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you play against that one guy who's got like 12 Venoms and they've all got witches hanging off it, you're like, this army looks amazing.
Yeah. Oh, no, it does. True. It does. Like same with like the well-executed like Landspeeder Storm. You know, they just look better when they're all on there. I mean, there's more things in Fantasy too, you know, or sorry, Age of Sigmar, where there's things on things, Skaven on things, goblins on things, you know, that kind of stuff. We don't have a super ton of them in 40K, but that Triumph of St. Catherine. Now, this is a quick aside, but I'll link it back to the Silent King here in a second. Like, you know, if you look at Instagram stuff and Twitter stuff, and you look at people doing sweet kitbashed Sisters of Battle stuff, every time I go looking for the model, it's one of those models from the Triumph of St. Catherine. Because that model has five or six really cool looking Sisters of Battle models.
Sure.
That you could use in and of themselves in any other situation. Like, if you were to buy two of those, paint up one as Triumph St. Catherine, and then turn the rest of those models into objective markers, other character models, you know, with using just a random bits or whatever, you would get more life out of that than just buying the model itself. Like, if you bought five individual character models.
Sure.
And I think that you're maybe not there with the Silent King box because there's only three of them, but that's another way to look at this.
No, you could. I mean, really, like, because I'm sitting here looking at it, like, I've got the Silent, again, I assembled the three models. I've not put them on the base, obviously, because I'm still painting it. But you could easily, like, I could probably pin in some magnets and have bases, and I could run the Silent King off of his throne as, like, an overlord. And I could do the same with the other guys. One of them is like a cryptech and things like that. It could be really cool.
Yeah, and they're not, those two dudes aren't especially unique. They are distinctive from other ones, aren't they? Especially
they
from
are distinctive. Yeah, their weapons are pretty unique. I guess one of them isn't, but the cryptech one, the staff, it's kind of like a very ornate staff of light. Looks very cool.
A lot to be excited about for Necrons, first time in a long time. I can't say I've deep dived the book as much as others. I won't try to compare my knowledge to you, Red. But from what I can see, like, there's just a new lease on life, which is exactly what they needed.
Man, I'm telling you that. So for every three battles you get into in Crusade, you get a title, and some of these titles, like, or for every battle you get a title, and then for every three titles you get. So it's kind of like, I don't know if you ever saw, but the Custodes have tons of titles too, right? Mm. And so my Overlord right now is like, you roll on a table. They literally have like 66 different titles.
Is one of them Reticus Maximus?
And it will be, but you're talking like Butcher of the 500 Worlds, like Slayer of the Stars Defiant, Lord of the Dawn, and stuff. I mean, just a ton of cool little titles that you can add on to it. I think it's awesome.
Nerd.
Yep, that's me.
This is great, though. When you can get in, I'm telling you, just get in there and do it. Heck yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I think even if you were just a person who just had liked Necrons before, jump in. You'll find a lot to love.
It really is compelling. I've never considered really starting a Necron army before, and this is, you know, it's where you think, it's like, man, those models would look cool in my collection, and now I can actually have something distinctive. I feel like there's options in the army of what to build and styles to play.
I feel like their melee units is actually just scary now. In melee, they used to be like, oh yeah, I have melee weapons, but I have no melee buffs, and it was just a bit lackluster. But now, man, geez, they can do some work.
Oh my gosh. They really can. And when you look at it and you build into it, I mean, when you consider that one of their custom traits, I think I might have mentioned it another time, but the Rad Wreath, which is if you're within engagement range, you're -1 to toughness.
Yeah.
Like the whole Legion or the entire detachment will give off that trait. That's such a big deal when it comes to their melee stuff, because a lot of their stuff goes to strength 7. And so to bring you down from T8, you know, suddenly puts you on the 4, or if you're whatever. I mean, so much stuff that puts them on wounding on 2s all of a sudden. Command protocols are so big in regards of, if you can time it right, you can get an extra strength or more AP. Novoke is a serious threat with how much it can put out melee-wise. It's just, there is so much potential to Necrons right now that they really, you know, it's too soon to make any kind of claim one way or the other that this is good or that's not good specifically. You know, I just don't think that the time has really been afforded to play out to make a call one way or the other against it necessarily.
Well, I think it's just, like you said, I think it's just a very exciting time for him. And I think the biggest reason that you touched on that as well is that it's unexplored. There are so many unexplored portions of this, whereas for the Space Marine Codex, I feel like it was coming out, you already knew what Eradicators did, you already knew what Outriders did, you already knew what all the new things that came, that they pretty much got, except for like the ATVs and the turrets and things. You all pretty much knew exactly what they were going to do and what their kind of position in the army was going to be. Good they were going to be when all the buffs boiled out and stuff, that remains to be seen. Sorry, Paul, go.
No. So I'm sorry to jump in. I'm going to say it right now. The turrets are better than Thunderfire cannons.
I will say right now, that is not difficult anymore. Thunderfires ain't what they used to be. I'm not shedding any tears for the Thunderfires, though. They broke so many souls.
Yeah, they had their time.
Well, I think what the cool thing about the Marine Codex now is that it's reconfiguring how everyone is thinking about their army list for their chapters.
Yeah, that's very true.
And some of the auto takes are not auto takes anymore. And some of the things that, you know, maybe you wished you could take before, like maybe bikes, Space Marine, regular old Space Marine bikes.
Look, I really rate them. For Dark Angels, I really rate regular bikes. Really.
And the Raven Wing stuff is so good. So good.
I'm not sure. I'm hoping Black Knights become a theme just because they're sick.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, Emilia, I don't think they quite do enough. I just wish you could take like a Thunder Hammer or something on the Sergeant or a Fist. But that would be enough to
Corpus Hammers over the top. Get it done?
Not quite. Not quite. I mean, it turns them into heavy bolters in combat, but there's so many ways to ignore damage one and now get extra feel no pains and stuff like this. I feel like it's just a little bit of a drop off.
I think with the extra attack, you know, I mean, but from Shock Assault.
Mm. Well, I just feel like Storm Shields just make them bad.
Speaking of Storm Shields, Vanguard Vets for Raven Guard. You know, you could actually field them now and not be embarrassed.
Yeah, dude, Vanguard. I was actually talking to some mates the other day. Vanguard Vets for Blood Angels, just Storm Shield, Power Sword. Holy crap, that sounds strong to me now. Like strength 5 with +1 to wound, a -3 possibility of up to 5 attacks. You know, you've got a 2+ armor, 4+ invuln, you know, movement 12. They seem like Sanguard light. Like if you were going to go, you didn't quite have the points for another Sanguard unit, you can just chop in the Vanguard Vets instead, and they'll do most of the same work.
Getting the invulnerable save is sometimes better than the Sanguinary Guard.
Absolutely right. Depending on the meta. Yeah, people are tooling to deal with Marines. The invuln is much better. I think there's a lot to be excited about. I do have one bone to pick. I have a gripe. I have a complaint. Uh-oh. Are you ready? Just let me know if you guys are ready.
I'm ready. Let's strap in.
Ready? Yeah, let's do it. Okay, guys. So I was reading through. I've done the Space Marine book cover to cover and inside out, back to front now, and I've really kind of absorbed it. I'll be doing it with the Necrons Codex next, and just kind of physically inserting that knowledge into my body. The thing that's bothering me in the gripe. So what is the one thing that Necrons are special for, Red? What is their thing that makes them Necrons?
Because they'll be back, man.
They'll be back. Your res dudes. Dudes will come back to life. And what did they give Marines? They gave Marines a better way of resing multi-wounds models than anything the Necrons have. That specialist super apothecary for 0 CP, you spend some points and then you spend some, or don't spend any CP to give him a Waller trait, he will automatically res a multi-wound model back to its full health. Do you know how hard it is? You can tell me how hard it is. How hard is it with all the buffs and everything combined to res a Wraith? That's what we're talking about here. Toughness 5, 3 wounds. Where you're comparing that to, say, an Inceptor. Toughness 5, 3 wounds. That apothecary auto gets it back every turn. Just bang, one's back. Like, so how hard is it to get a Wraith back?
Less than, if you go off reanimation protocols, you're looking at less than 10%, actually.
Yeah, exactly. That actually annoys me. The thing that makes Necron special, they just gave a better version of it to Marines, which I don't like. I feel like they could have... Not
you're not that. Wrong. You're 100% not wrong because of how it goes with their core and what's core and what's not core versus that. I totally agree. I will say before anybody comes out of the woodwork, Necrons do have, so you can give a Technomancer the Phylacterine Hive for 20 points that will allow it to bring back with rites of reanimation, it will bring back a canoptic unit. There's a whole list of units that can bring outside of core units all of a sudden. However, big however, it's just not the same. It's not the apothecary rule. It's not as easy to pull off. It's
not auto resurrecting.
You can bring one back, but they come back with one wound. They don't come back at full wounds.
Full.
So.
Yeah. And then you compound that again. Let's say that same apothecary is giving up essentially a 6+ feel no pain. And we know you roll three dice, you have a 2/3 chance to get a 6. So to all intents and purposes, you're bringing back 4 wounds, 4 effective wounds when it all boils down. That actually really annoyed me when I was reading it. I was like, if the one thing I didn't want to see them stay in the game is Marines having wholesale feel no pains. We saw how toxic it was for the game with Iron Hands. Admittedly, Space Marines have reduced in power significantly since then, but still it's the same metrics can be applied. You can still spam those bodies and just keep bringing them back. Now, where this gets really bothersome to me, so you think about the points. You pay 15 points and possibly 1 CP to get this benefit. What's the points of a Plasma Inceptor? It's around 50 points. the first time you bring a guy back, that guy, that pays for himself. Twice over, pays for himself. Yep. And pays for that buff. You bring two guys back, absolute gravy. You bring five guys back across five turns, you have essentially given yourself about 300 points of efficacy on the table you didn't have before. Like, how many Necron Warriors do you have to raise in a game to get the same efficiency? It's like somewhere in the region of 30, isn't it?
If you said six models at 300 points, yeah, you're talking almost 30 models, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And just them having that efficiency, that auto efficiency, that bothers me. But apart from that, like, I'm actually quite impressed with the rest of the book. I think the vast majority of it is reasonable. Maybe I'm overreacting. It's not a big deal, but it just bothered me that they got that.
I don't think that you're necessarily overreacting. I think that the apothecary's range is a lot shorter. The Necrons just kind of travel around and carry that stuff with them, but the apothecary has to be within, 3 inches of the...
3 inches, yeah.
...affected. Now, it is hecka strong. I mean, look, I'm not saying that's not the case, and it's going to be real frustrating when it works out. I just don't see it happening as often in practical play. With some of the faster moving things, like the things that people are actually worried about.
Yeah, look, that's really fair. And I mean, right now you can res an ATV for God's sake, but hopefully that gets changed pretty promptly, because that is like the ultimate erroneous over the top. Let's not let that exist option.
Yeah, but, I don't want to sound tone deaf either. The combat revival happens at the end of the movement phase, so you can bring things back. You know, like the apothecary could move and your unit can move towards him.
Yeah.
You know, so there are like there's you can cover a lot of range in one movement phase, but you're also probably limiting yourself in another way to do that. So it's probably a compromise and not as bad on paper as it looks in practical play.
But yeah, my issue is the fact that it's free. Like, if you still had to pay one CP for it every time you brought a dude back, it'd be a lot more palatable. Or if it was more than just 15 points to upgrade the apothecary, who I feel is the best one. Him and the chappie, I feel like they're the two best options there. Yeah. But the ancient is also can be very good. I actually don't even know.
Apothecary rule is a value. It's a value. Super value. Incredible mega value. It is the, I don't know what the toilet paper math is. It is the 64 rolls when you only bought 15 roll efficiency.
The paper math. That's hilarious. Why have I never heard of that before? But anyway. But yeah, so that's my little gripe of the day. But look, apart from that, I think the Marines Codex is actually quite well made. I like that it's a bit more vanilla than say the previous one. I think a lot of the power is held within the supplements, where I think it should be. All the real flavor and all the nuance and all the really exciting things should be in the supplements and should be specific to the different armies. But I do like that they gave a good working baseline that doesn't feel overpowered or over the top for a lot of armies to work from. And on top of that, Terminators are good. And who is unhappy about that? Mm-hmm. Can anybody out there complain about Terminators being good? I can complain about Intercessors and Aggressors and Thunderfire cannons and repulses till the cows come home, and I will not say a single peep about, like, if Terminators get OP, you will never hear me say it or mention it. I'll just be like quietly going about my business.
I'm playing my first game with the changes of Blood Angels. So without Forlorn Fury, without Wings of Fire, several of the relics that I normally play with coming up this weekend. And I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. I feel it's very strong because, look, the new Sanguinar is really good.
Oh, and Corbulo. Sanguinar and Corbulo, amazing.
Yeah. Corbulo walks, though, so it's, and you got to kind of gear up for him. And I mean, not that you can't stick him in something that helps him with that. But I mean, I think you're making army choices then. And I don't know that I'm there yet. I don't know if I'm willing to come off what my current play style is right now. But, I'm going to try to mix it up some.
Yeah, good. Very well said. I don't think anybody should be dramatically changing. Well, if you don't have your supplement book yet, like if you're playing Death Watch or Blood Angels, I wouldn't go running out and buying a huge swathe of new army based on the things that you got in this, in your little baby release. I guess it's an index essentially, but I still think there's enough to be excited about. Like, I'm cracking open some unbuilt on sprue stuff I had from Dark Angels, and I'll probably be giving that a bit of a go more than I was. Like, I'm actually just really excited for Ravenwing stuff. I mean, the Deathwing stuff looks like the obvious power, but man, the Ravenwing, or you just move and you get a 5-up invulnerable, that seems really good.
Combined arms, I think, is going to be probably where you want to be.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you need more than that one big brick of Terminates to be your counter charge, keep the juicies safe. But I really like just regular bikes, like with Ravenwing, just 5-up invuln on the move. Well, and
when Blade Guard came out, in the box set, I said I didn't like them that much. I think that three dudes going around with swords and basically just absorbing damage for a while was not amazing. But yep. six guys, a I'm a little more story. Excited about it.
Would you take I'll six you or what. Would you take five, you reckon?
No, no. That's a great point. I was five guys ignoring any blast aspects, right? I think yeah. five is, and especially you go to like an impulser yep. with five guys, you can throw a hero in with the impulser. I think yeah. that's a great little combo. I mean, that's a buddy of mine. He's playing Black Templar, and he's running a five-man squad, and I'm sitting there. I want to run. I mean, so I'm running Scorpec Destroyers, right, which are essentially the Indomitus reciprocation, I guess. I'm not going to say they're the same by any means. But it was an interesting little bout. So he had Assault Intercessors. They're behind a wall. I was fortunate enough to get my Scorpec Destroyers in. They went in and cut down his Assault Intercessors. And then his five blade guard turned on my Scorpec Destroyers and just annihilated them. But then somewhat fortunate, and I admit I had quite underestimated the durability on my part, my Scorpec Lord went in there, and he was, so I had the -1 to damage Warlord trait on him. So that turned all their Mastercrafted Power Swords into 1 damage weapons. And then he also had the Temporal Weave, which made him toughness 7, which made it that much harder. And then they have a Stratagem, which is -1 to wound when you're trying to hurt him. And so he endured quite a bit. I was quite surprised how the Scorpec Horde was able to survive that.
That's a lot of stacking up. Oh, my God. That's cool, though.
Yeah.
Awesome. One of the things that I'm considering, I mean, I was thinking about Blade Guard and Impulsor, you know, if I want to get, you know, I guess it depends on how experimental I want to feel coming up for this game.
I'd do it. I think this is the best time in the game, best time in the edition to experiment and just chuck it against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah, you're right. And then, you know, worst case scenario, Sanguinar just swoops in and saves him. So,
yeah, I do think five is the perfect number for a unit like that.
That's a good call.
With only three of them, and you could kind of just ignore them. Really, you could get away with just ignoring them. Oh yeah, cool. They're going to kill some guardsmen. I don't really care. I'll deal with them once the other big boys are dead. Because at three, they weren't that crazy powerful, but five, you can't ignore them anymore, man.
Yeah, that's good point. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this. We'll discuss Gaz's original form and then close out. See you in a few minutes.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I still got Adam in red.
Hello.
Hello.
Gentlemen, so we mentioned we were going to talk about Ghazghal, the early generation. This may be Ghazghal 1.0. Ghazghal Mag Urk Thraka. Did you know his middle names were Mag and Urk?
I did.
I did not.
So Ghazghal is possessed of considerable cunning, and in battles tends to concentrate more on commanding his troops than most war bosses. To this end, he fights from his highly mobile battle wagon to ensure everything is going according to the plan, only joining the fun at the critical point. In combat, he favors demonstrating his psychic power and stainless steel skull up close and personal.
Dang, stainless steel.
Stainless steel. Yeah, they still have that in the 41st millennium. Like, that's still a sellable moniker.
Stainless steel, man.
the battle wagon for everybody at home is so cool. It just looks like a big go-kart.
You're just going to skim past his psychic power?
Dang, what no? is his psychic power?
We'll be back.
So, no, let's, okay, we'll take some guesses here. So, do you want to take a guess as to what his psychic power is? Red, what's your guess?
The foot of Mork or Gork.
Okay. Adam, what's yours?
Big headbutt.
It is Hammerhand.
Wow.
Wow. There you go. That's how old Hammerhand is. Jeez.
Grey Knight power, huh?
Yeah. That's where they learned it from.
So, a cranial rebuild also has a 25% chance of awakening an innate psychic talent in the orc receiving it. The roll comes up, bang, on 25%, brilliant. A really strong war boss. This is Andy Chambers talking about his generation of Ghaz here. I check up to see what psychic power he's got and roll up Hammerhand. That means he can turn himself into a complete combat monster as necessary.
Nice.
No doubts at all as to how this orc came to power.
Hmm.
Talk about being a prophet of the Wog here. Come on.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
So keeping in mind that he's a combat monster, Adam, I'll give you the first guess here. Give me an idea what you think some of his war gear is.
Well, so he's got a big sword. He didn't have the fist back then, I don't think. So yeah, I think he's got like a equivalent power sword. Like it would be AP3 back in the day, if that was still a thing then.
That's your guess. Red, what's your guess?
Yeah, he's got like a power sword and... that's about it. Go.
This is just the melee weapon we're guessing here?
Yeah.
Is it not a chopper, like an axe?
His melee weapons that he has is a knife and a chain sword.
Oh, wow.
Good old butter knife. That'll sort him.
He is, no doubt, remember, a combat monster.
Combat monster.
No doubt. We knew it. We could tell. Because he had a knife and a chain sword.
So good.
I'll give you one more. You want to guess how he protects himself? What is he donning?
It's not the stainless steel jaw, is it?
He does have a stainless steel skull.
Skull. What about his orc body? Didn't he have like a cyber orc body?
No, this is before that. I think he gets that later. But I want to. You can guess whatever you like.
Yeah, that's all I got. I'm out.
I'm gonna guess like heavy armor, super heavy armor or something.
Okay, flak armor.
Oh my lord!
He's wearing cardboard.
He's wearing cardboard.
And
he does
have a custom force field. He has a refractor field.
Oh, look at that!
Yeah, and he has two bionic. Yeah? His full war gear here is flak armor, a knife, two buzz bombs, a chain sword, a custom force field, a refractor, two bionic bits, the stainless steel skull, and a bionic arm, and a bolt gun.
Goodness. And a bolt gun. So good.
Coming in at the bargain price of 90 points.
He is just an Aussie, isn't he? He's just Australian. He's playing knifey spoonie with everybody. That's not a knife.
Yep.
What a legend.
To have made it this far in history and become what he is. Yeah.
Well, what are some other long, like, how many other characters can you guys think of that have had the longevity he's had? I think Abaddon, Khalgar. Two I can think of. Even the demons then. Oh, there was demon Primarchs back then still. The tiny, teeny, tiny little cute demon Primarchs on 25 mil bases with their nice goblin green flock.
Those were an epic.
Yeah, I can dream. You're right.
They were an epic. They were on 25 mils, and they were, size of what a space marine was back then.
Oh, that's right. People used to use them as demon princes and greater demons like Azinch and stuff before they had the models.
I think they were still too small. They may have been, I mean, they definitely exist. I mean, there's Magnus, it looks like, what's that D&D guy? Orkez or something? One of the Lords of Hell or something?
No idea. Beelzebub.
You're so close.
Oh, mate.
Yeah.
Beelzebub.
Yep. As far as orc characters that have stood the test of time, I don't know the first time you ever saw like Mad Dog Groxnik.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know how old he is. I got a feeling though he's only had the one model. I don't feel like there was a first model for him.
But yeah, I watched it.
For a long time there was no Huron Blackheart model for 20 years.
It's crazy.
It's like that kind of stuff. That wasn't as common back then.
Yeah, there's only the one Mad Dog Groxnik model. Yeah, interesting. Are there actually any legitimate models that would have been at the same age as Gaz? Was Yarik the same time as that first Gaz, or was Yarik the time of the second Gaz?
I think Yarik is the second Gaz when they're doing the...
Yeah.
I don't know if you... Did Yarik come from Armageddon or did he exist before that?
Yeah, he did.
I think,
he's got his big old lobster claw.
Yeah, but that's because he took it from Gaz.
Literally the size of his entire body. the lobster claw that's bigger than the entire rest of the model.
That's
so
the Yarik I use because I just prefer it.
It's because you're a bad
yeah.
So that thing is so fantastic. His gun is legit though. It looks like the front of a prow of a pirate ship. It's got like a skeleton mouth over his bolt gun. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's the new model is way better, but I just kind of prefer that old model. Because I faced him so many times in the past.
I've got the old one, but I painted him poorly and he just chips every single time I use him. So I bought a resin one and just painted that.
There you go. I mean, he is an ancient character, but so Armageddon, it's really pretty cool how they tied that into the overall story of 40K.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best fluff developments they've put out in quite a long time. It was really exciting. Yeah, if you guys want to speak on it further.
No, you go first before I unload. Go for it.
So how many wars have there been for Armageddon? There's been four now? there's been another one recently.
Is there another one recently? Are they on the forums? Yeah, I know there's been at least three.
There was the first one, which was the GKs vs. Chaos and Space Wolves. And then they had to purge the whole planet, which really, really annoyed the Space Wolves. And then there was the second war, which was Orcs, and third war, which is Orcs. And I believe there's a fourth war as well, which happened during the Cicatrix Maledictum, and Armageddon got invaded again by demons, I believe. But I haven't really read any fluff on it, because there were a lot of rumors late 8th edition that we were going to get Angron in a new triumvirate on the next battle for Armageddon. New Gaz, new Angron, new Yarik. Those didn't eventuate, as you know, every other rumor. You know, for every rumor that we have, like, we get one of
them. We can all wish list.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's what it is. But yeah, that one was supposed to be like the next war for Armageddon. So maybe in the fluff there is that fourth war. But man, there's so much more history of that place. Red,
oh my goodness, here we go. Man, so, I mean, it's funny, like, with the first Armageddon War and how they had to, like, purge it as if it hadn't been done, you know, 10,000 years ago, given that Armageddon is the, I mean, you're talking about Ulanor, right? Mm-hmm. Armageddon is Ulanor. And so, for anybody familiar with the Horus Heresy, Ulanor was essentially the capstone achievement, the conquering point, and really the end of the Great Crusade. It's where they beat the largest orc force that had ever been amassed. And so there's something about this planet that just attracts orcs to it. And they just keep coming back for it. And so I don't know if you guys have got a chance to read it, but any of the stories that, like, you know, retell what happened there at Ulanor is just crazy. It is amazing and awesome. Like, there's one where it's a short story where Horus and the Emperor are essentially fighting. Like, they go down into Armageddon and, you know, Ulanor at the time, and essentially the planet's like collapsing around them, and they fight the biggest orc ever. And like Jagatai Khan's there. I mean, the whole thing, it's just crazy chaos as they're fighting off the biggest orcs. And then, of course, after they kill all the orcs and they succeed, the Emperor creates the largest parade field like ever. I mean, it's like, you know, you can see it from space, kind of. The whole planet gets leveled. Armageddon gets turned into this, you know, pinnacle of celebration for the Great Crusade. And then the Emperor calls it, puts Horus in charge. Huge mistake. Heads back to Earth and doesn't really tell anybody what he's doing, although he maybe could have.
I mean, Horus, like, supposedly saved his life, and
yeah, you know, like, oh yeah,
that's, you know, it was like the last little bit of encouragement he needed to hand over the keys to the kingdom to him, and
that's right,
roll back to Earth.
And so there we go.
I think it's alluded to that the that Ulanor is the ancestral homeworld of all orcs. It is like it was the heart of the orc empire. It was their ancestral birthplace, and I love the idea of that. It seems cool. Like, that's why they're always drawn back there. That's why, like, secretly the warp will take them there, because like, they all in their hearts want to return to and reclaim their lost empire. Just the idea of an orc empire, I love that concept of just this a conglomeration of warlords held together by this one absolute brute of a guy who's powerful enough to mold orcs into an empire. Like, no wonder that guy, like, actually beat up the Emperor. Because, like, orcs are like crocodiles, yeah? The older you get, the more fights you win, the bigger and stronger you become. Like, a crocodile technically doesn't actually stop growing. As long as it keeps eating, like, they just keep growing until they either die of old age or just, they, you know, diseases or whatnot. But, yeah, and orcs, I alluded to be something similar. So if you've got an orc that is, like, double, triple the size of a dreadnought, you know, the size of, like, a small knight, maybe an armiger or something, it's been alive for, like, thousands of years and won a bajillion battles. Like, the idea of that dude by, like, just that guy excites me. Just the idea of that, the concept of that, I think it's brilliant. Very well written, very well put together. And, a real testament to the writers of the 30K. They did a magnificent job tying that together. And, yeah.
Well, has this always been the case, or was this, like, a retrofit of was Armageddon always Ulanor, or was that just a nice little bow to put on things?
I think it was a bow. I mean, it would be interesting to talk to one of the writers. Maybe next time you get one of the big writers on, Paul, you can actually ask one, like, was Ulanor always Armageddon? Or were you just like, hey, man, it'll make a lot of sense if this was Armageddon.
I love it. I mean, I don't even mind if it was retconned. I mean, there's sometimes you come to that natural conclusion of things. It's like,
You
know, this all these three stories are really cool, but what if it actually linked back to this and was, you know, again, it just, like, you know, you just feel like your mind explodes.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly right. I love those moments in storytelling. Yeah, where you just your eyes open, your head kind of, you sit back in your chair and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah, and you're right. And so in that first war for Armageddon, it was Angron against, was it Grey Knights?
Stern. Yeah, Grey Knights, Stern was there.
And Space Wolves?
Yep. Logan Grimnar was there as well. Back
and that's when Logan Grimnar got, like, I think that's the famous story of where the Inquisitors were like, well, we have to kill all the Imperial Guard that are here.
Yeah. Yep.
And Logan's like, not on my watch.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly right. And that started a bunch of, like, biff-baff. It's not even a term I just invented there. But it started a lot of issues between them, and like the forever since then, I think the Space Wars have always had Inquisitors.
Yeah, and then the second War for Armageddon is when my boys, the Blood Angels, were there.
Yep, exactly right. That was Dante versus Gaz, and then yep. It was Yarrick versus Gaz in the third war. And then, yeah, I'm still, well, the jury will be out. Someone in the chat will probably tell us if there's a bit of fluff piece about a fourth war. But yeah, I'm of the opinion there is a fourth war for Armageddon.
I got to say, big win. I'm pretty sure it was out of the second war. One of my favorites, hands down, was Tycho.
Yeah.
Oh,
Tycho is. So that was one of the first models I ever painted that I was just like incredibly proud of myself. Like, I mean, gold armor looks cool. You know, I felt like I got the weathering just right. You know, I just remember painting him just being really, really happy with myself after that. But the whole concept of the dead man's hand, you know, his digi lasers, like Tycho's war gear, that's somebody's character. That was their Gaz with his custom, you know, flak armor and knife, you know, that became Tycho in this battle. And whatever. I mean, he's a legend.
He's a legend. He is.
Literal legended. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of those old characters. Like I it actually bothers me. Like Yarrick has been pushed to the side. I mean, he is a very old man. He was a very old man at the start of that war. But I'd love to see him become a protagonist again, because it kind of annoyed me when he got superseded by, like, not even a chapter master, just like a captain of the Space Wolves in Ragnar.
Well, and so with that, like, it's cool given how 9th edition kind of went back in time to the Indominus stuff, because arguably in Indominus you can position, I mean, unless Yarrick got some very extensive rejuvenate kind of treatments, it's really hard to argue that he, I mean, he could be, but I don't know what condition he would be at the point of Dark Imperium or Vigilus Ablaze, because it's so far forward. And I say so far, I mean, it's a couple hundred years forward with Dark Imperium. And I think that's what I kind of like about Indominus, is it takes us back a little bit. I know, like, everybody likes the story to move forward, but there's enough space with how they move forward with Dark Imperium for us to go back. Clearly, there's enough space because we can go back right to after the Gathering Storm and enter, you know, insert the Silent King back into it. So,
yeah, I do like So I don't know how deep, and I don't want to really spoil a lot of what's going on with what the Silent King's actual plan is, why he's back, what he's doing. But it is pretty cool. It is a pretty, pretty cool bit of fluff and a bit of plan. It makes a lot of sense once you break it down and you get into the juices.
Well, what's really cool is, have you gotten a chance to play, I know I'm going all over the place, but Armada, Battlefleet Gothic?
Not the computer game.
So the computer game is really the second one, right? The first one's cool. The second one, they really step it up to 11. And in that, you can be, I mean, there's Imperium, Chaos, Orcs, you know, you can be them all. But the storyline, they've got even Necrons, right? And so it's actually set at, like, when Abaddon broke Cadia, right? Like how he did it by essentially dropping a Blackstone fortress on him. And the Necrons were kind of helping it out. And so, again, going back, fast forwarding to what you were just talking about, you know, if you pick up Psychic Awakening and what's going on in Psychic Awakening and what the Necrons are doing with the Pariah Nexus and everything, I mean, kind of, it's there's some interesting, you know, narrative tie-ins on which direction would the Imperium actually go if they could essentially, I mean, the Pariah Nexus is bad for the Imperium, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
like it's not a good thing. They're killing people off. They're still stealing people, right? Because they're quieting the psychic presence and stuff. It's doing all kinds of bad stuff. The Imperium does not want that. But if they could control it, like if they could tamper with it, I mean, there's a lot of Pandora's box kind of allusions to this. But you can just see where some of the Imperium might go in that direction. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool.
The second War for Armageddon, before we get too far away from it, was also the birth of Mephiston in the story.
Oh, snap. That's right.
Yeah. So one of the trivia questions is, how many models have there been for Mephiston?
Two.
Two?
Three.
Three.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, because is it Calistaris, or is
Oh, the librarian.
He's the librarian
beforehand.
From Space Hulk.
Oh, snap. That's cheating.
Is right. It is. It's a bit of a, like, that's why I asked it kind of tongue in cheek, but that's the yeah, Calistarius is Mephiston before he became, you know, fell to the Black Rage, went into the Death Company for a bit, then was crushed by a rock, and then he woke up because you can't kill him, and then he killed a bunch of orcs and then walked back to the Imperium Lines.
Yeah,
there you go.
And now he's,
I gotta read
his
book. I hear his book's pretty good.
It is good. So his first book in there, it's very clear that the author, like, does not care about 40K psychic powers. He just does what Mephiston does. Like, he doesn't.
Sure.
He has the powers he needs to be dramatic and awesome in the book. And it is, it's cool. It's very cool.
I'm actually getting to the point where I think they need to start moving on some of these really old, forever characters. Guys like Logan, Dante, Azrael, like, either.
Careful, you
know. It just seems like. I know, I am. Don't worry. I love Azrael. I actually really like Logan. I think in the fluff, he just seems like he's like your stern but fair older uncle, you know? But yeah, I feel like these guys have just been sitting there, same with Khalgar, just been sitting there at the head of their chapters for a time immaterial. Like, how many hundreds of years or thousands of years have gone past in the fluff? Technically, only like a couple of hundred, but it feels like a lot more, man.
To be fair, I mean, you know, when you think about it, like, we were talking about how long Khalgar has been around. I mean, he's the dude who fought the Swarm Lord.
Yeah,
all
on
kinds
the
of stuff,
the
right?
First, the very first Tyranid invasion. We're up to like the sixth Tyranid.
I mean, you got to think about it. Yeah. Like, I think given what you just said, you know, Gilliman had never engaged the Tyranids, right?
Mm.
And I'm sure during the Crusade he encountered all kinds of stuff, but the Tyranids and what they did with McCrag and all this other stuff. Like, he hasn't done that. And if you read Dark Imperium, you know, you're talking about, like, characters moving on and whatnot. I mean, Gilliman kind of gives Marnius the what for and is like, hey, man, like, you've not really accomplished anything. He talks down to him.
So, okay.
Let's think
of it this way. Like, some of these characters are, like, akin to, like, Luke Skywalker. You just don't move Luke Skywalker out of the way.
You see what I did there?
Yeah. You don't do it.
That's great.
You don't do that. And obviously, and this, I mean, obviously with actors, you know, I'm not taking us off on that tangent. I just wanted, you know, again, slightly funny. But these characters in print, you know, these, like, the person coming into the hobby today has not had to exist through three epochs of their existence. Like, you were a young boy and then an adolescent, and now you're an old man. Like coming into, if you came into the hobby yesterday, you're still enraptured by Azrael.
That is fair. But so what I guess I'm getting at is the guys like Yarrick, who have essentially feels like they've slipped into absolute obscurity. I would much rather him have a definitive and just ending to his story rather than him just drop off and be neglected and ignored. And, like, you know, I'd much rather him, you know, walk off into the sunset or die heroically in some, you know, amazing battlefield, rather than him just kind of disappear from the fluff.
So you mean story-wise that jumping 200 years in the future and they didn't tie up some of these things?
Yeah, they don't need to discontinue the models or stop writing their rules, but just give me some kind of definitive thing. Tell me what they're doing. I mean, some of them, they have told you what they're doing, but if you're not going to write fluff for them, give them an ending. Give us like a definitive, you know, this is a thing that's happening for him. Like, I mean, there's a lot of fluff you can write for Dante at the moment. He's essentially the ruler of half the galaxy. Imperium Nihilus is essentially his domain. He's like the head honcho on that side of the Imperium. He could be doing amazing, awesome fluffy stuff. But yeah, we'll see.
With some of the characters, them being alive in the story did not preclude them from being in the rules. And as a matter of fact, some of them were dead. And like one of the tenets of the game was like, you could be playing this, like, the in this 10,000 year span, you could be playing at any point in time. So you could be using a character who's dead in the story right now, but in your game, they're alive. Like Lysander, I think it teleported inside of a rock and died.
The fridge.
There were a couple, and maybe he didn't die. Maybe he made it out, but I don't. I know there are a fact that there were several named characters in the books that were dead in the story, but yet you can still play them in your games.
Yeah, I think that's fine. There's no problems there. But I don't know. It just it feels like the story is moving on, but it's not. I don't feel like a lot of times it's doing justice to what it was before. Yeah, and that's just my nostalgia talking.
No,
right?
Feel free to disregard this. Yeah, no, I mean, I can get behind you on that. I mean, because you want to feel like some of these characters that got us here in this story or whatever, you feel like the characters are due some type of just conclusion or continuation.
Yeah, either way. Well, I was really annoyed with G-Dub during the Gathering Storm when Abaddon was fighting against Vigilus. Abaddon was fighting against Kalgar. I'm like, oh, cool, they're actually going to make a crazy cool fluff piece, and Abaddon's going to kill somebody. He's actually going to finally kill someone important. It's going to be a thing. It's not going to be Falbaddon anymore, who just rocks up, fails to kill anybody, and gets defeated. And just as he's beat the absolute out of Kalgar, destroyed him on every level, and he's about to finish him off and has to teleport out. And I'm like, God, G-Dub. Why did you fail so horrifically? Don't write yourself into an unsatisfying position, because that was an unsatisfying position.
Yeah. They're going to steal his ship, man.
Yeah, they were going to steal his ship. He couldn't just stab Kalgar in the heart before he TPs out. Like, he's already beat him to death, and you feel like he's just been playing with him. And instead of finishing his meal, he's just like, oh, well, I guess I'll leave, guys.
And no spoilers, but, you know, we are talking about lore, and we don't talk about it enough on this show. We are all lore junkies. And
absolutely.
And Abaddon gets his due, man. I mean, I shouldn't say he gets a just writing, like all this stuff, where, because you hear about Primarchs bending the knee to him and offering to serve in the name of chaos and that kind of stuff. And there's a few scenes in the Siege of Terra where, you know, he is not afraid to be large and in charge.
Like, yeah, well, there are some. I think he is still, more than a lot of others, he's still embodied at that time during the Siege of Terra and things like that. He still embodied what it was to be an Astartes, what it was to be a warrior, what it was to... He wasn't fully corrupt at that point. And in fact, he wasn't fully corrupt until he got the sword. Until he got Drachnian, he wasn't fully like chaos through and through. He was like, I'm here for my warriors, my people, and for like undoing the injustices we feel like we've been done.
And part of it, like, I know what I'm talking about, like, is that he wants to be Horace in Horace's spot once he sees Horace seemingly slipping in his mind, kind of thing.
Well, so there was the fight. Oh, sorry, this is a big foreshadowing, but there was a big battle between Space Wolves and Sons of Horus, in which a fight happened between the Lion and Horus. And after that fight, a lot of other guys in the Legion had to step up. And when Abaddon stepped up then, I feel like they wrote themselves to feeling like, hey, he was like, hey, I can do this. Cool, I can be a legitimate leader. I can be the head honcho leader rather than just the second in command.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of Abaddon. I mean, I don't mind saying that. I mean, and part of it is because I'm a Blood Angel player. And if you played during second edition, you hated Abaddon. You actually had rules for it. You had rules where you hated him.
Yeah, you still do. You did in your codex. Yeah, you got extra attacks on a 4+ against Black Legion. Yeah. But I think guys from our generation, and we're all around somewhere around the same age, we grew up with just endless books of Abaddon's failures. And so I feel like it's hard for me to love Abaddon. 30k Abaddon, absolutely. I think he's awesome. 40k Abaddon, I'm just like, eh, what have you done for me lately?
I've changed my mind though. I appreciated the character that he existed. And then reading ADB's 31k, you know, Black Legion books, you get this. They're incredibly well written.
Oh my God. I love those are two of my favorite books.
And then some of these scenes in the Siege of Terra, I mean, it's like this, he deserves it. Like he's struggling. He's punching above his weight. He is immortal on the cusp of an immortal's world, and he's doing better than some of the immortals.
Yeah, yeah. Hands down, the Fall to Chaos, people think the Fall to Chaos happened after the Siege of Terra. No. Start read those books. They were well and truly gone by the time they rocked up there. And some of the guys like Abaddon and his ilk were looking at them and being like, I'd rather stay the way I am and not end up being an absolute lunatic. Like, they had to send Perturabo to go and find the World Eaters, because they're just like, they're during the Horus Heresy, they just kind of fell to corn and dropped off the face of the earth, and it's like hanging out at a random world, just killing each other. They're just hanging out, killing each other, nonstop butchery. And so Perturabo was there. Horus is like, please go save them from themselves, and like, we actually kind of need them. And yeah, it's that stuff is both amusing and like terrifying to think.
Oh, we've gone way down a rabbit hole. Thanks, y'all, for listening. Hey, this is why we play. That's why we do this, because it's all stories are great. Models are great. Oh, we don't even know how good we have it with models. Like, spend a little bit of time putting together and painting models from another company. You will run back to your... what's the fiddliest models in the game right now?
Non-Forge World?
Dark Eldar Witches or something. You will run... Yeah. Back to wanting to paint them opposed to any other model.
I think the Admech spindly bird boys are now my new, like, they will turn to dust.
Kit Nemesis.
Kit Nemesis, that's right. I told you guys I've got like 20 Rustalkers in Infiltrators, and I played with them solid. I took them to a bunch of events. I even got some podiums using them in 7th edition. Every time I used them, I'd come home and they would just be in pieces, just in multiple pieces. Half of them would be off their bases. Half of them have their little spindly arms, all those cord claws just falling off, ripped off. And I'd be like, oh, yep. Well, back to pinning. Another 2 hours of pinning so I can play him at the next event. But yeah.
Good times, man. Well, Red, Adam, that's our show.
It's been a blast.
What a variety. We went from me complaining about rules to me complaining about fluff. Good times.
You've really shown some range here.
That's right. My depth. Thank you guys for indulging me. Let me go on my little trains.
We'll see everybody next week.
Cathartic. See ya.
Baby in the corner.